Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the Yes Mother podcast, a podcast covering the A&E show Bates Motel. Today we are going to cover episode 2, Nice Town, You Pick Norma, and I am Sue.
And I'm Emily.
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep cause my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away.
So, how are you, Emily?
Emily is good.
Good.
Just had a week of Thanksgiving and family and lots of company, lots of food.
Same, same. So it went well for you?
Yeah, and tonight we had our last dinner out with the last remaining family, and they're in a hotel, and they're flying out in the morning, so that was our last little hurrah.
Nice. Good. Yeah, ours went well, too, so.
Good. You had mom and dad.
I did. I did. I had mom and dad and our oldest brother, Ben, for dinner.
Yep. I had them for pie.
Yep. Then they went to your house afterwards for pie. Emily and I both live in Utah, but we're about, I don't know, what, 45 minutes away from each other?
Yeah.
And Emily had all of her in-laws over, so I took mom and dad and our brother for dinner. So, yep. Turned out good. We had a good time.
Good.
We did. But, yep. Then I had to work a lot afterwards, so it didn't really feel like any time off at all.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Kind of lame, but oh well.
Oh well.
So, well, let's start out with what we're currently watching. How about you?
All right. Okay. I watched... The weekend before last, one of our other brothers came with his wife and baby, and that's Matt and Bea and Lucy.
Yes.
And we watched a documentary that came out last year called The Imposter. Did you see that?
No, I don't think I don't know about that. What is
that? Oh, it was so good. Okay, it's about a family in Texas, kind of... of the redneck sort. I don't want to offend anybody. I don't know. They're a little rednecky. And their son, 14-year-old son, goes missing. He was playing basketball, called for a ride. This is all allegedly. Called for a ride. His older brother answered and said, I don't want to wake up mom. She like worked nights or something and slept during the day. And so he told him he had to walk home, and it was like 2 miles, and they never saw him again.
This is on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I added it to my list a while back, so it sounds familiar. Yeah, I just haven't watched it yet. Interesting.
A Frenchman. So 3 years later, a Frenchman. He shows up at a police station claiming to be this missing child.
Right, okay.
And he actually gets a quick visa, the sister comes to get him, and takes him home. And so he's now their 17-year-old son, allegedly. He's got all these wild stories of sex trafficking and all of the stuff that happened to him. He's got brown eyes. And this kid had blue or green, and the family takes him in, and it's really, really strange. And they like accept him as like they accept his story that's actually. I mean, and this is his own mother.
Well, does he look anything? Brother.
No, and he dyed his hair at the police station overnight. He was found in Spain, but he's French. They leave him in the police station overnight. Alone, and he finds this kid's like picture and story, so that's how he finds out who he decides to claim to be. And he dyes his hair blonde, and he just acts weird. It's so crazy, and it's so creepy, and it's, this guy is insane, and he is, they're interviewing him, and you're just listening to him, and you're like, you're insane.
The guy who is the kid?
Yes, and he's telling the story, and the family that takes him in are telling the story, and it's so weird. It's one of the wildest stories you've ever heard.
When did this happen?
You know, I don't know.
I mean, is it?
I don't remember.
Like, kind of recently?
Oh, you know, I think it was the 90s. Yeah, it was the 90s. So,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
It is a wild story, and it's creepy, and you get just the willies, and this guy, I don't know. Watch it. It's...
Wow,
so
I am
weird.
Totally, because I think all I did was kind of read the, I think it like was recommended to me from Netflix, you know, based on whatever, and I kind of read the synopsis and went, okay, that looks interesting. So,
well,
I
remember
it
coming up quite a few times in a movie podcast I listened to, and they all liked it, so it was in my radar as a, I'm like, they told a little about it, and I was like, that sounds interesting.
That's crazy. I mean, it really kind of reminds me of, have you listened to that This American Life episode about that little boy that, like, in the 1910s or something, or 1920s, like, goes missing, and, like, the police claim that they found him, and they bring him to his mom, and it's a different little boy, but she thinks it's hers, but he was only, like, 3, and it'd been, like, 10 months, and so... They looked similar. Does this sound familiar at all?
No, I don't think I heard that one.
Okay, yeah, it's an episode. I'll have to look it up and tell you which one it is. But it's fascinating. It happened a long time ago, but the kid was like 3 or 4, and so for 10 months to go by is a little bit more understandable than a 14-year-old versus a 17-year-old.
Well, and this kid isn't 17. He's like 24. It's like the craziest stunt ever tried, and it worked.
That is crazy.
But it's crazy because you start going, does the family have something to hide? That they're like, oh yeah, this guy claims to be him. You know, we're going to pretend he is because now no one's looking for this kid. You know,
is
you
there
just
any
don't
kind of,
know.
Is there any kind of closure? Do you ever find out? Or is that
a little. There's a little, but I don't want to say more than what I've said.
Right. Wow. Okay. I'll need to definitely watch that then.
Yeah, it gives you a really willy, I don't know. Matt and I were just, what? No way! And just getting the chills, I don't know. It was creepy. It's just a strange story.
Wow. All right. Well... Anything
okay.
else?
I got to introduce. What did you say?
I just want to kind of stop recording and go watch that right now.
It was good. Let's see. Oh, I was able to introduce my brother-in-law and sister-in-law to Girl Walk All Day, which always makes me happy. That was a 2010 or 11 movie. I think 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, it's, well, it was one of, it's a movie that's free on the internet at girlwalkallday.com. And everybody, seriously, if you have not seen that, absolutely go check it out. It is so much fun. It's probably the most fun I've had watching anything. And it makes me happier than anything I've seen in years. And it's like basically just dancing, but it's really good. And it's done to a soundtrack, an album called Girl Talk. Well, the DJ that made it is called Girl Talk, and his this album's called All Day. And he's basically just a DJ that arranges mixes and stuff. And There's a story, but it's just dancing, but it's told through story, which, I don't know, some people might think that's a little too avant-garde or something for them, but just check it out. Give it 15 minutes. If it's your thing, it's your thing, and you will love it. I don't know anyone that hasn't loved it.
I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard you talk about it a few times now, so.
Yeah. It's so great, and they were just my people. They were just absolutely enchanted.
Okay.
You can buy it from the website on a disc, and I did that. It's like watching it on the TV. Or it's free to anybody. It's broken up into 12 segments online on its website.
Right.
I think it's Vimeo or something. And anyway, it's absolutely enchanting. It's also like guerrilla filmmaking, where it's just no permit, streets of New York, a camera, and a cameraman. And I think New York's the only city that they could have pulled this off, because there are a few people that stop and watch, but not as many as you think, with this girl just dancing down the sidewalks and climbing on stuff.
That's funny. It's New York, I guess.
New York. It's so much fun. It's really worth a try, at least.
And right on.
You don't need any accounts or anything. You can just, anyone can watch it.
Well, I promise I'll watch it and I'll give you a report. Anything else? Did you finish Friday Night Lights?
Yeah, I did last time. I remember Julie Taylor.
Oh, I thought you said you still had an episode or two to watch.
I think that was the first. Oh, yeah. Yes, I did finish. I don't know, it's been a while. It's been a couple weeks.
I know. It ends pretty well. I kind of like the way they ended it.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Yeah. I thought it was well. Okay. Anything else you've been watching?
No, I can't think of anything right now. So that'll be it.
Okay.
Well,
I was just looking up, and just if anyone's interested, the This American Life episode I was talking about. It's called The Ghost of Bobby Dunbar, and it's episode number 352.
352.
Cool. Yep, The Ghost of Bobby Dunbar. Fascinating. Like, it's one that I listened to and then listened to it over again right away, just because I was like, what?
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
American Life had one like that for me. It was one where they went into a house that, like, hadn't been touched.
Oh, that house like out by the lake?
Yes.
Where they dropped that baby crib out the window, the mom and the sister?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one.
That was interesting.
I've listened to that one, like, 4 or 5 times. Yep, one of my favorites.
Twice. Other than that, it's the Tobolowsky Files, I guess. Did you see there was a new Tobolowsky Files a couple weeks ago?
No.
There was a new one. I was so excited.
Oh, sweet. I'll have to download it. Okay.
Seriously, guys, Tobolowsky Files. Here's another recommendation if you're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast, so you probably are.
I guess we should include, instead of what we're watching, podcasts we're listening to as well, because I do that more than TV.
I know. Yeah, okay. We can totally recommend good podcasts, but the Tobolowsky Files,
it's
this
the best.
Man, Stephen Tobolowsky. You've seen him in movies. You may not know his name, except you know him as Ned Ryerson from, what's that movie?
Groundhog Day. Probably his biggest role, but he's like one of the most credited character actors out there.
Like, I think he is like the most...
Yeah, he's probably got like 200 or 300 credits in IMDb or something like that.
Anyway, the man can tell a story.
Yep.
I love stories like The Moth, all of that. But this is seriously the best podcast ever.
Yep.
And I think he talked about it on his Twitter account that there's a certain amount that are available now. The rest, the first 20 or so, are available in like an audio book.
Right.
The Dangerous Animals Club.
Yep.
Which is worth purchasing. I think it's probably read by him.
I'm sure it is. It has to be. He's just got that. He just does it so well.
Yeah, and there's a movie too, and that's how they got the idea to do the Tobolowsky Files.
Oh, right, yeah.
Did you ever see that movie, Sue?
I didn't. You just
Yeah,
reminded me about it. I kept meaning to, but it's been,
I
I
think
mean,
I
we
had to
did.
get it from Netflix. The like
Yeah.
discs. It's called Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party, and it was just a
That's
little
right.
indie flick, and it's just Stephen Tobolowsky telling stories, which is apparently he has these parties in Hollywood where he just invites some friends and he just tells stories. I guess everyone in Hollywood knows that he's a good storyteller.
Yeah.
Even the guy David Chen that does Slash Filmcast watched this movie and said, "This guy can tell a good story." So he contacted him and he started this podcast with him, and it's so much fun. It's so good. It's just if you like just listening to some guy talk about interesting things, it may sound boring, but so great. Anyway, there was a new one out recently, so I was glad to see that happen.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm gonna download it tonight. Well, I watched Pacific Rim again. Well,
How
because
do I
Cam,
find this? Redbox?
yes, I went ahead and just bought it. But yeah, it's on Redbox. But yeah, when Booker and I were watching it, Cam had been at our friend's house and he came home about the last half hour and watched it with us. And then a couple of days later, he's like, "You need to just go buy that. You need to watch it." So we watched that again. And then Booker and I last weekend watched The Conjuring.
How was it?
Ooh, it is seriously pretty scary and pretty good. It For a horror movie, it's up there. It's good. I mean, they just do.
What is its what is its horror? Does that make sense?
Yes. So it's a family. It's a mom and dad and like five or six daughters who move into a new house. Well, it's an old house, but new to them. And things start happening, you know. It starts out kind of slow with like weird sounds, and then it just gets worse and worse. And it's obviously, you know, haunted. And they call in Ed and Lorraine. Oh, crap. What's their last name? Walters? Walker? They're. Have you ever heard of these guys, Ed and Lorraine? They're demonologists. They're like a good, they're a pretty well-known couple. Like their most famous case would be the Amityville.
Oh, okay. So I've seen them in
Ed and
like
Lorraine
talking
Warren.
about. Okay.
It's Ed and Lorraine Warren. So they've
I've
been.
seen them talking about the Amityville, so I know who you're talking about
So
now.
you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
So,
and I read that book.
okay. I mean, they're the real deal. And before I watched The Conjuring, I had no idea that this had anything to do with those two. But like Ed Warren, he has passed, so he's not alive anymore. But at the time, he's like the only, I don't know, what would you want to say, civilian that's ever been like given the okay from the Vatican or something to do exorcisms. I mean, he's the real deal.
Oh, okay. Okay,
And
so is this like a true story?
it's based on a true story. And apparently, it was the worst case that these two have ever come across, besides the Amityville one, that they just kept it a secret until lately.
Okay, so the family didn't run, just do a book or something like happened with Amityville.
Right. And so it's just, you know, this family that's just haunted, and it's just frightening. I mean, it's good because it scares you without the, like, I hate when a movie will just rely on like startling you, because startling me is like the worst thing. I hate being startled.
Right, and
And that's
it
a
starts to
cheap.
feel like, okay, guys, come on.
Yeah, it, to me, it's just like a really cheap way to scare me, because anyone can be startled. I mean, so I don't think it's fair when they do that in horror movies. It's okay when it's once in a while, but
I
if
agree.
that's all they're depending on, I'm not on board. But so The Conjuring does a really good job of just making it like truly pretty scary. And I swear, and Vera Farmiga plays Lorraine Warren in the movie. And it's like the early 1970s. It's like 1976 or something, or 75. And it's so cute. She dresses, because if you know Lorraine Warren, she's just always so cute. She's just this cute old lady that always has like a ribbon in her hair, and she wears like ruffly blouses. And so they dress Vera that way in the movie. So it's kind of fun. And it's really good. It's really good. If you truly kind of want to be like watch a scary movie, this is one to watch.
All right, and is there like, I know the Amityville horror has been like disputed and twisted, and the book and the movie are so different. This one is a little more pure, apparent. Is that?
You know,
Well, I guess we don't know.
I really don't know, because like I going into it, like I said, I had no idea that this was an Ed and Lorraine Warren case. I didn't know that that's who Vera was playing.
Guess I'll have to wait for the History Channel, like,
Yeah, so I don't.
special about it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think the Amityville one. I think the mom and dad, because here's the thing. I got it just got my curiosity up about Ed and Lorraine Warren and kind of what they were. So on Netflix, I went through and tried to find anything about Amityville, and I found this documentary called My Amityville, and it's a documentary about the son Danny, who's now, you know, like in his 40s or so, who was the oldest kid in the 70s, and it's like his story.
Yeah, I've heard that there's something like that, and that's where
And
most of the disputes happen.
yeah, and I mean it's okay, it's worth a watch, you know. It's interesting. But it just shows like how much his mom and stepdad, which were the couple in the Amityville, I mean they went on like talk shows and did all sorts of press. They really sensationalized it, and I kind of think that's why Amityville is more known than this family of The Conjuring. I think this family just kept it under wraps. I mean, maybe something will come out now, or I don't know. If there is something, I don't know. I didn't really research it, but it was good. I'm going to watch it again, especially now that I know kind of when the really kind of startling
Right.
little parts are, so I can enjoy it a little bit more, so I'm not like peeking over a blanket.
Yeah, B doesn't like to be startled either.
Yeah, I just hate it. But so yeah, those are the two main things I've watched. I did watch, I kind of had on the background the other night, a movie my sister-in-law suggested on Netflix called Burke and Hare. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's Simon Pegg and Andy Serkis. Andy Serkis is, he played Gollum in the Lord of the Ring movies.
Oh, that's where I know the name.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see him like actually as himself and not a CGI, because he also played Caesar in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Right. I
So
always like Simon Pegg.
yeah, Simon Pegg's, I mean, I love him. But Burke and Hare is just a funny movie. They play like Scottish guys in like the early 1800s who become grave robbers to make money. They rob graves and murder people and then sell the bodies to doctors for, you know,
Right, that's
anatomy classes
practice. That
and
old
stuff.
practice
And
happened a lot.
it's pretty funny because it's got that British humor. Like there were some
You know I
serious
love.
laugh out loud moments. And it has Hugh Bonneville is in it.
You bought Oh.
Yeah, Crawley?
Lord. Yeah, Lord Grantham.
Grantham, yeah, from Downton Abbey. So he's in it. just a little part, and like yeah, Tim Curry's in it a little bit, so it's funny. It's I don't know.
What like year is it?
I think it said 2010.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I expected something earlier than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would say, if you're like folding laundry or,
Yeah.
it's just one of those movies to put on the background.
I fold laundry to Grey's Anatomy.
I've never even seen 30 seconds of that show, so.
It's what it is.
Yep.
But it's good laundry folding. You can take your eyes off of it and be curious to know
Right.
what's going on.
Right. Oh, and the girl in the Burke and Hare is and it's Burke and Hare, like two last names, like Burke and Hare, Hare.
That's exactly how I spelled it in my
Oh,
notes.
okay. Because when Randy first told me about it, I was like, Burke and Hare? I thought it was like one word.
Oh.
What is a Burke and Hare? But Isla Fisher, is that how you say her name? Is it Isla or Isla? Do you know who I'm talking
I
about?
don't know.
See, Sacha Baron Cohen's wife, Isla Fisher, is ISLA.
I
So
feel like I hear Isla.
I would think Isla, but then I think I've heard people say Isla, but Isla sounds better. So
Isla
Isla Fisher,
sounds like
it.
I've heard that more, so. But.
She's cute and funny. She's kind of 80. Amy Adams looking. I always get the two of them mixed up if I don't know who's in it. I'm always like, is that Amy Adams or
Or
that
that one that
other
has a weird name I can't
And this
pronounce.
time it's the other one. But yeah, I recommend it. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
And it's less than half an hour, so maybe Rob will like it too.
Rob and I were brainstorming on the last movie he saw in the theater, and he saw just blanked. Arg! The last Quentin Tarantino.
Django?
Django Unchained. And that was long.
That is long.
We saw it on Christmas Day, I think. But yeah, see, now Quentin Tarantino, we set aside some rules we have.
Well,
Like, it's too long.
well,
Because
yeah,
it's good enough to watch, and he
but it's
loved it.
Quentin. Yeah, I mean, you gotta make, yeah, he's the exception, of
He is
course.
the exception.
Yeah, and Cam reminded me that Spider-Man 2 is not the last movie he saw in the theater.
That's good.
He saw the Avengers.
Oh, you know
So.
what? When you said Spider-Man 2, I thought, you didn't even get him to see the Avengers in the theater. Of course, I didn't see it, and I still haven't seen it.
Well,
But
it's not your cup of tea, but I love it. But
it is
yeah,
Joss Whedon, and I am becoming
that's true.
quite the Joss Whedon fan these days.
But I think it might be possible that in between Spider-Man 2 and the Avengers, there was nothing.
Funny.
So, all right, so that's what I've been watching.
All right. Good stuff.
Yeah. So, all right, so should we get into the recap of episode 2, Nice Town You Picked, Norma?
Let's do that.
All right.
Okay. That would be me. Okay. We start the episode off with Norman looking at that diary with a flashlight. He's noticing details like the number 4 on the door. Room number 4 is the room Norman found the diary in. The doorbell rings, and Norman throws the diary under his bed, and we see some sort of utility belt under his bed. Norman goes down the stairs and answers the door. It is a young man standing there, and he says, "Hey, Mom." Norman doesn't look very happy to see him. "Man, I'm nasally. I apologize. I don't know why."
That's okay. It's that time of year. Getting a big
Yeah.
snowstorm tomorrow.
That's right. Big snowstorm tomorrow. Good times.
Yay.
We have Hawaiian family, and
Oh, that's right.
they're leaving in the morning, so they're probably going to be excited to get out of here. It's
Probably.
been nice for them.
It's been beautiful here. We've had like such clear, cold but nice clear
Right.
days. I love that, but
Well, and even not that cold, although they are big babies, and it was cold to them. I'd be a big baby too if I lived in Hawaii. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. So
So we got the diary. Norman's looking at it with a flashlight, so he's kind of like looking at it on the DL. suppose.
Yeah, on the DL, and I liked how the camera, they kind of made it look like one of those flip books that they kept flipping through it really
Yeah.
fast, and it was just like scene, 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 you know.
Right.
I thought that was kind of cool. But
Is that the first time we get a good look at it? And we
yeah, we
see a
get
page or two maybe in the first.
yeah, we get just a tiny glimpse in episode one, but this is the first time we see like, you know, the number four on the door, where it's obviously definitely these scenes take place in the hotel or motel it is. But then I don't know, the thing that stands out to me most in this scene is just how unhappy Norma looks to see
Right.
Dylan
And the utility belt,
and the utility
that's
belt.
gonna come back to us.
Yes.
But yeah, Norma. She and Dylan, there's been some animosity.
Yes, to say the least. So yeah, I mean, not a very long scene, not much to say, really.
Okay, so that's why my name's on the next scene.
Yep.
Norm and Norma, they're in the kitchen cooking breakfast. She is telling Norman that she will give him, the other son, some money and he will be on his way. Then Dylan walks in. Norman and Norma are pretty cold towards him. Then Norman asks him why he is there. He says that is what normal people do when they have lost their jobs and home. They go back home. And he says most normal mothers don't move out of state and try to hide it from their own son.
Yeah,
So
so that.
obviously he feels like his family is very abnormal, I guess.
Yeah, that is pretty obvious. I mean, they're so cold toward him.
Yeah, and it sounds like maybe, I think we can gather from this that he feels that it's very unfair and unwarranted. She's got this thing with Norman that he's never gotten, and it's just made it so he gets the brush off, and he doesn't
That's,
find that fair.
yeah, I
That
was
what you
kind
get?
of wondering about that too. I mean, do you think there's bad blood or something because of something that Dylan's actually done? Or do you think it's because of who his father is? Or is it that he just doesn't fit in?
If you ask me, I think it is way more her problem than his.
Right. So
I really
you
don't
don't think there's
think.
anything that Dylan's done to create this?
I don't. If,
I agree.
yeah, if I were to really think about it.
That was just a possibility in my mind, 'cause it's like, why
Yeah, and that's,
are
you
they
know,
so cold towards it? It
on my
was
first watch, and I know we're trying to keep this fairly spoiler free, but on my first watch, I totally bought that he was just a jerk and, calling
right.
her a whore and just a horrible person. But
Right.
I don't know. I don't get that vibe anymore.
No, I don't either. I don't either. So, and I don't know. It sounds like Norman's dad was more the problem. So maybe Dylan's dad wasn't so bad. So, you know how like some mothers, I know it's a horrible thing, but it happens where they actually like resent the kid because of who they had a baby with. Do you know what I mean? Like if the kid's dad treated him bad, then they don't
Yeah.
really like the kid that they had. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And less in this episode, doesn't she say that Norman was like her chance to start over? Or am I
Right.
not? Is this episode? I think it is. Because it feels recent, and not that
Right.
it was only been
Right.
like 2 weeks since I even started the first episode of the show ever, but it feels more recent than that.
Yeah, I just think for some reason Norma had a, she just took to Norman from the beginning, and Dylan just kind of got the shaft.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's totally a blaming the kid
Yeah.
on the
Okay.
dad.
The next scene, we see the cute girls. That's just what I'm going to call these group of girls. They're waiting at the bus stop, and Norman walks up. Bradley asks him why he left the party so early, and he says that he grabbed his history book and actually went home and studied. Suddenly, they see a car coming down the road, driving pretty out of control, and Bradley realizes that it's her dad's car. The car crashes kind of across the street from them, and they run up to it, and we see Bradley's dad completely burned and barely alive.
Yeah, that would be like so scary to be
Oh.
Bradley. Can you imagine opening that
No.
door and seeing that? He was scary.
He was, and yeah, I mean, pretty much all my notes say is Bradley's dad is pretty gross. Because, yeah, I mean, he was completely burnt. And how horrifying to come across anyone like that, let alone your own father.
Yeah.
So, yep. And then next, we see a tow truck is taking away Bradley's dad's car, and Norma, Sheriff Romero, and Deputy Shelby are all there, and they're just talking. And another deputy yells to the sheriff that there is something he needs to see, and the sheriff walks over to him. We see Dylan in the background, and he walks up to Norma. He points out what an interesting morning it's been, and that she picked a great place to start over. She tells him to stop calling her Norma. She tells Dylan that if he is going to stay there, he is going to need to pitch in. She ordered some new bed linens and he needs to pick them up. Then Sheriff Romero calls Norma over to a parked truck. He tells her it is Keith Summers' truck and that he hasn't been seen in a couple of days. He asks Norma if she has seen him and she says no. So, I just, in this scene, Norma just again shows so much animosity towards Dylan. I mean, there is just no love there. And Norma again just makes a terrible decision of saying that she hadn't seen Keith Summers. She's just digging further and further. She should have just said, yeah, he stopped by my house and he seemed really agitated. I don't know. Maybe the, I don't know. She's just a bad liar.
Yeah, she. Although at times she's pretty good. She kind of can keep her cool pretty good sometimes. But she makes bad decisions.
She does. Yeah, that's all I really got to say about that scene. Not much going on.
Yeah, not much. Okay, so then Norman is in his English class, and the teacher, Miss Watson, is telling the students to partner up and study a poem. Emma asks Norman if he wants to be partners. He says yes, and she says she will come to his place. Norman tries to protest, and she says she'll be there at 11. So she's pretty confident, and he seems a little hesitant. Maybe he's wishing someone else had asked him. Is Bradley in the class with him?
I don't know. I kind of looked for that, but I didn't see Bradley.
He seemed a little hesitant in that way, but it could have just been because he's just socially awkward. I don't know.
I think that's what it is, and I think it's just hesitant because I think what he hesitates is her insisting on them doing it at his house.
Yeah, he definitely does hesitate that.
I don't think it's really anything about partnering up with Emma.
I think she just might have surprised him with her boldness,
I
maybe.
think so. I think so. And
And yes, he definitely was a little iffy about. He actually tries to stop her, and
he
then she
tries to
just
stop her
kind
and she's like, I'll
forcibly
be there at
says,
11, you know. So do you think is Emma just curious about the house itself or you know, because she was kind of pushy about doing it at his house, which, I mean, I don't know. Is she ashamed of her house or something? Or.
I don't really get that vibe, and she invites him over later.
That's true. But she is.
Maybe she feels like it would be to her advantage. I think we kind of can figure out she already really likes him.
Right.
I guess there's a possible curiosity, but she doesn't act curious.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird that she was so, I'll be there at 11. You know, she wouldn't even let him because he tried to say, that might not work or, you know.
Right.
I don't know. And I think he just didn't want her over there. I think he was just afraid that his mom is going to do what she does.
And what she did.
So, yeah.
Okay, so then Norman is in the next scene. Norman's in the hospital with some flowers. He sees Bradley sitting there, and she sees him, and she gets up, but her boyfriend intervenes and asks Norman why he's there. He says he felt bad and wanted to give her some flowers. And, I think this is perfectly fine. I don't know why. I guess, I don't know. It's interesting that her boyfriend's so worried about it right now.
Yeah, I don't know why Twilight
Because,
Dude was so
yeah.
upset about it, because it just, I mean, what's wrong with bringing someone a plant when their dad is,
Especially, he was at the scene,
he
and
was there.
he tells him that, and Twilight Guy's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he threatened?
I guess so.
I guess he must be a little. And she actually is quite flirty with him. At the party, she was genuinely kind of flirty. She's always been sort of genuinely flirty with him, so maybe he is threatened, and maybe he has a right to be.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, I mean, 'cause she kind of is, so, I would think a observant boyfriend would be a little bit threatened, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, it's in the hospital. It's in a public place. There's all sorts of people around. It's not like he came to her house or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it seemed perfectly. I don't know, I think he should have let her talk to him because that was nice of him to come by with a flower.
Right.
But I don't know. I guess I'm not in that guy's shoes.
I guess not. All right, so
You want me to do this one too?
yeah.
Okay, so the next scene, Dylan is at a strip club and the guy sitting next to him seems pretty upset, like he's got tears rolling down his
He's
face.
crying.
And asks Dylan what he's looking at. And then he says, sorry, he's upset because his boss got in an accident and all burned up. And Dylan says, that isn't right. The guy pulls out a wad of cash and pays for drinks. And Dylan asks where someone gets that kind of money in this small town.
Yeah, so I don't know. This
This
scene
is
just,
weird. It's
it just
really.
seems a weird scene to me.
It's a really strange scene. I guess they needed to meet up somehow, but this just seemed like odd. Just have these two guys at a strip club and one just tears streaming down his face. And he's like, what are you looking at? Sorry, my boss is. And then he like.
I don't
Anyway,
know.
yeah.
Maybe it's normal for guys to be sitting in a strip club crying.
Oh, the despair.
But
Funny.
yeah, it just, I don't know. And it just is kind of a weird scene. There's really not much to say about it. Dylan and this guy have to meet,
They
and
have
so
to meet.
they meet,
And he has to see that he's got a big wad of cash and where's a big wad of cash handy at a strip club.
Yeah, but it was hundreds. I mean, I thought ones were the more
Right.
handy, but
Big, he must be a high roller.
I guess so. Don't
The
know
girls
what.
like it when that guy comes.
I guess so. Oh man. Yeah, so yeah, Dylan and this guy kind of bond at the strip club.
Oh yeah, so that's what we take away from this, is these two meet and Dylan sees money.
Dylan seems funny, and I don't know. Does it seem kind of weird to you that, he's like, my boss got all burned out and was in an accident, and Dylan says nothing about, oh yeah, that happened in front of my house?
Yes, I did think that was weird. I noticed that.
Don't
My
know.
notes, I'm missing a page in my notes and it has these, and I've been trying to walk into our bedroom, but my husband has the TV on. To be perfectly frank here, I've been waiting for Sue to do the next scene so she can read a long time and I can push mute and walk in there and look for my notes.
I'll do the next scene. Dylan comes home really late at night with the linens. Norma is waiting on the steps, and she says, "Listen, dumbass, this is not going to stand." She says she is trying to build a life for her, Norman, and he is not going to screw this up. He reminds her that he grew up in a house with her, and it was always what she was trying to do for Norman. He said sorry if he was a little annoyed at her for driving away his father after she was caught skanking around with Norman's father. She said it wasn't her fault. She was 17 when she met Dylan's father and had no idea what she was doing. She met Sam, Norman's father, and fell in love. Dylan asks how that worked out for her. She says, I hate you. I hate you. You have never had a word of kindness for me. He says, sorry, he just couldn't get on the tea party with her and Norman. She says, Norman likes me. We are close. That is the normal arrangement between mothers and sons, not this crap. Then Dylan asks how she got all the money to buy the house and motel and car. He says, I never had a dime, and he has been worried about money since she was conscious. She says, Sam sold insurance, and he was well covered. Dylan says, good night, Norma, and walks out. And she says, stop calling me Norma. I am your mother.
Did anyone else, when they heard the tea party thing, actually picture them having a tea party?
I did.
So I'm not alone.
Nope.
Good.
I totally pictured them, like, sitting at a little table in Norman's room with, like, stuffed
Me
animals.
Too, with, like, a little girl tea party.
Yep. But, so...
The other thing I take away, just off the top of my head, is why... He's an adult son. Why does she have such a huge problem with him calling her Norma? I think that's kind of a little weird thing, because Norman calls her mother, you know, all the time. And it's creepy.
Yeah.
I wonder if she, like, forced him. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like...
I don't know. I mean, I can see. Because, I mean, yeah, he's adult, but he looks... It's not like he's 40. I mean, it looks like he's, like, 20, 21 or so. Well, he's definitely at least 21 if he got into a strip club. But... I mean, are you going to want Scout to call you Emily? Isn't it just kind of a...
Respect thing,
respect
I guess.
Respect thing? I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine calling Mom Jane. That would just be weird, you know?
I guess so.
So, I just think it's... But I know that there are plenty of kids out there that do call their parents by their first names, and it's not... They're fine with it. You know?
I call Dad GW sometimes.
I call that GW once in a while, too. Yeah. But he seems to like it.
Yes.
Or I call him Gio sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think the most upsetting thing about this is how she just flat out tells him that she hates him.
Yeah.
So there's a reason to call your mom Norma. Rather, if your mom
exactly.
hates you, okay, you're not my mom.
I know. She had just finished saying... that he's never nice. She hates him. And she demands him to call her mother. That doesn't jibe.
It doesn't. And it just, yeah, it, she's just a little nuts. Cause I mean, who tells their kid that she hates him? I mean, that's, and right to his face like that. And he looks, I don't know. You just kind of feel bad for him because, I don't know. He doesn't seem like that bad of a guy.
No, he doesn't. And he obviously went through something horrible, losing his job. And he probably had that moment where all you want to do is just go home. And he finds out his mom moved.
Without telling him, moved out of state. I mean...
And look how much, at least she hates him, and he still is kind of almost like stuck there. Like,
yeah.
He needed to be home so bad that he's doing it.
Exactly. And it's got to be tough to, like, see your mom be so close to your sibling... And not you. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be weird if, like, mom treated one of us like Norman and the rest of us like Dylan? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely some sort of sibling rivalry.
Right. Because just to let, like, the audience know, we do come from a family of seven kids, and our mom has shown, I would say, about as equal love amongst all seven of us as you can do.
Yeah, I
You know what I
agree.
mean? Like, I would not be able to tell anyone who mom's favorite is.
Definitely.
She has a way of making us all feel like she's your
Maybe a
favorite.
little bit, Matt.
Maybe a little bit Matt, but it's not Matt's fault. He's the youngest. And he's just so cute.
We love Matt.
He's all of our favorites.
Yep.
But you know what I mean? I mean, there's no Dylan and Norman in our family. Everyone
Oh,
is
sure.
equally loved by her. So this just kind of blows. I don't know how to understand this.
I hope we delve deeper into it.
Right.
We do a little bit, in the season.
Yeah, that's true.
Things change and
Yeah,
all of that, but it'll be good to learn more.
So, all right.
Okay, next scene. Norman and Norma are cleaning the kitchen. Dylan walks in and asks if they ever get tired of each other. Man, that was so funny to me.
Oh, man.
I mean, we know what they were doing. They were cleaning up every tiny speck of blood that could possibly be in that kitchen. But
Exactly. Any
it
DNA at all.
when Right, so but just having someone that has no idea just walks in and they're both just like on their hands, just talking and cleaning like thick as thieves. It was just a funny thing to say. And then the doorbell rings and Dylan answers it and it's Emma. Dylan brings her into the kitchen. Norm is all happy to meet her and starts asking her all sorts of questions. Dylan tries to interrupt her, but it doesn't work. Norma asks if Emma is okay. Emma says she has CF and she is on a list for a lung transplant. Then Norma asks what her life expectancy is, and Emma says maybe 27. Norma says for them to go upstairs and do their homework. When they leave, Dylan asks Norma if she thinks Emma has to take that thing out of her nose when they make out. 27, she's got the life expectancy of a rock star.
Really.
I didn't catch that till I saw that written
Yeah,
out.
I didn't think of that either. That's funny. So, I don't know. Norma's questions are just, it just made me so uncomfortable.
Oh, you just don't. Of course, you just don't ask all those questions.
Who asks a teenage girl what her life expectancy is?
Just right upon meeting. Yeah. I mean, I have a daughter that has, my 4-year-old has Rett syndrome. So she's special needs. And I do have conversations. People do ask sometimes. They hear weird things and I don't know. They think it's okay. And, I'm cool with it. I'm really cool with it. I'm
Right.
cool with any question about her. But, yeah, people ask stuff, Sue, and they talk and they ask me her life expectancy.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've even asked you that, and I'm her aunt. Because I don't want to think about it.
Then I
But,
won't tell you.
yeah, don't tell me. But, well, I've babysat Eleanor in public, like at the hospital when Lucy was born, and there was a man that whose daughter or something was having a baby, and he kept asking me questions about Eleanor, and I just kept on waiting for him to ask me, like, what does she have?
I know, I love it because people like, at first, she doesn't have any physical. It's a genetic disorder, but she doesn't have any like Down syndrome where you just kind of tell right away. But she
Right.
does have little hand movements that she does.
Yep.
And it's so funny because people, it seems like first glance, they just think it's a baby. Then they're like, wow, that's a really big baby. And then you see it go flash through their eyes. Something's wrong
Right.
with her. I should just start. Keep asking questions. So I'm almost upon meeting, I'm like, this is Eleanor. She has Rett syndrome. She can't walk or talk, and she does weird things with her hands. What else do you want to know?
She's so cute.
She is the cutest.
Oh, she's adorable. But yeah, so yeah, Norma's questions with Emma, just that scene just cracks me up because
It's funny,
she
and it's
seems
uncomfortable.
it is, but Norma seems like really happy to meet Emma. Like, I mean, is this what went through my mind like the second time I watched it was, is this like her dream girl for Norman? Like,
Like, oh, what's your life expectancy? You're
yeah, like she
gonna
could
be
get
dead early.
together.
I
Norman can,
think you could be with her.
yeah, like Norman could be with Emma because then she's probably only going to live about 8, 9 more years and then she can have Norman back.
Exactly. I totally
You
went
know what
there
I
too.
mean?
Yeah, because she did. She was like, oh, because Bradley got turned at the door. Toot sweet.
Exactly.
Bye. But this girl, ooh, you've got medical problems. Come in, come in.
Come on in, handicap girl. Go study with my son upstairs, please.
Yep.
Let me know if you're hungry. And, she just seemed to love Emma. And I
And
really
I'm sure
like.
that's why she asked the life expectancy. I think we're right. I think that's totally it.
So that would give like Norman some sort of ruse or something to have like a normal life. And then, yeah. And then she can just have him back. She's.
Especially after those girls coming to the door,
Right.
asking him out, basically, and then Norman sneaking out and going to a party with them.
Right.
This might be the first time where she's like, I could really lose him. Some girl could come along, and take my Norman away. And then this, dreamboat girl comes along she's like a little gift from heaven.
Yep. Yeah, I thought that was very interesting, very telling. Kind of a just an insight into how Norma's brain is going. I don't know.
Yes, and I think Dylan's move of asking Norma if she thinks Emma has to take that thing out of her nose when they make out was so calculated to just see her face, because he knows.
Yep.
He just
Exactly.
knows that's going to get her goat so bad, the thought of Norman making out with a girl.
Why else would you say that?
Totally.
If you knew it just wouldn't get a rise out of her and upset her. Yeah, very, very interesting scene right there, I
It
thought.
was very interesting, for sure.
And Emma was just so cute and just answered the questions, just boom, boom. Like,
Yep, because
it
like
was
you said,
nothing.
like I said, that people do ask, so she's been asked
She's been
before.
asked, yep.
She's been in the situation 100 times, and she knows what to say. She's not worried about it. She's not upset about it. It's her reality, and.
Yep, and I like how Dylan kind of in the middle of the question, he was like, Mom, didn't you need to go to the grocery
Oh,
store?
yeah,
Like,
Dylan is like
what's
trying to stop it at all costs, because seriously, it's that I would be dying inside if my mom was doing that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yep. So, yeah.
Okay, so the next scene, Norman and Emma are discussing the poem Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright, and they're up in Norman's room on his bed. And Emma says it's about how can a god make all this beautiful stuff in the world and can also make stuff scary and evil? She says they can relate it to contemporary murders like OJ or Charles Manson. Then she finds the diary Norman found in the hotel room. She says she has read a lot of Magna and asks if she can borrow it. I love this scene.
Yep.
I mean, I wouldn't. First, a poem. I probably would not have related it to murders for some reason. I don't
No,
know. She went a weird way to me.
I remember really liking this poem. I remember studying it in either high school or college and liking it.
Yeah, and I kind of think more like it's kind of that age-old question. If there's a God, why are children suffering and
Right.
all of that? And why are there such scary monster animals? I don't know. It seemed more like that than trying to relate it to modern day murders. But.
Right, but you could also relate it to Norman himself. I mean,
Absolutely.
how can, obviously she likes Norman and, thinks he's good looking. So he's like, God can make all this beautiful stuff in the world, but then he's also scary and evil because he's got these secrets and this,
Yeah, this poem wasn't chosen on happenstance.
No. But yeah, so the diary that she finds, I looked up a little bit about manga, and basically all it comes down to is that it's just basically a Japanese form of comic book. So,
Yeah, I think it's so cute. The way she finds it, it's kind of half sticking out of the bed, and she just kind of sees it and just swipes it. Norman, like, panics. Ah! Like he had found porn or something.
well, because that's what you'd expect. I mean, I don't know.
And then she's so nonchalant about it, and she's like, oh, I've read stuff steamier than this before. It's really cute.
Yep, I like Emma and Norman together. I like her. So the next scene is Norma is in her bedroom putting lotion on her legs, and we see a really nasty scar on her thigh. The doorbell rings, and she runs down and opens the door, and it's Sheriff Romero and Deputy Shelby, and they need to ask her some questions. And the sheriff says that she had told him that she hadn't seen Keith Summers, but they have an eyewitness that says they drove by and saw Keith outside talking to her and Norman, and it looked a little heated. Norma admits to it and says she didn't know he had met, had she ever seen him, but just had she seen him recently. And he says, well, some people might think the last week would mean recently. And he asks if he had made any threats to her, and she says if he had, she would have called the police. The sheriff says Keith wasn't happy she bought the property. Norma says the fact she bought it at a good price on foreclosure doesn't incriminate her in his disappearance. Sheriff points out he never said anything about a disappearance. She says he is implying it, and he says she is inferring it. He wants to come in and look around, and she says he needs a search warrant for that. And then he tells her that she better work with him on this, and they leave. So again, Norma is just the worst liar ever.
Yeah, she just acts like she has something to hide, but she's trying to be nonchalant. She doesn't act suspicious in like a jittery way. She's just acting like she's fending off a prosecuting attorney and she knows how to do it in a very obvious way. That's how I looked at it.
Right, 'cause she kind of twists his words around and, well, I didn't think you meant had I ever seen him recently. I just thought you meant, had I never seen him. I mean, she really turns it into like a game of semantics.
Yes, and just from her first few sentences, she acts like a suspect trying to dodge, and being obviously trying to dodge hard questions.
Right. She doesn't do very well.
Nope.
Because, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of an uncomfortable scene. And, like I said in that other scene, I just wish he would have said, yeah, he was at my house the other night and he was upset and he left and I haven't seen him since, That just would have made a lot more sense than, I don't know. Just lying to cops. I just am, I don't know. It's just not a good idea. You're not smarter than them.
Yeah, they do this for a living, and you get caught in these lies, you're in bigger trouble.
Exactly. It
I mean,
just.
you get caught in a lie. Obviously, you're lying now, so you have something to hide because you're lying.
Right. And just when it comes to like cops or detectives or anything, they, like you said, this is their job. They know how to read people. They know what they're looking for. They know when you're lying. It's just better to be honest and just deal with the consequences. But
Better not to hide the dang body in
just don't hide the body,
the
people.
first place. We told you this last episode. Don't do it.
So, I don't know. That's all I have to say on that one.
Yeah.
Except, Sheriff Romero, I mean, I know he seemed very suspicious of her from the first meeting when they pulled up to the hotel that night. And I didn't think he had much of a reason to be, but now I think he does. And it's because of her, you know? She's the one that's now made her more of a suspect in whatever he thinks has happened.
I agree, and I feel like I would have been cooler and less suspicious than her.
I would hope so. I've just never been in this situation. But so anyway, Norma's a bad liar.
Yep, Norman.
And the scar is really gross.
Yeah, it is. And we see it knowing that we see it in such a way that we know that this is something that's coming back.
Right, because she kind of lingers on it. The camera kind of stays on it. But anyway.
And it does. It comes back.
Yep.
Okay, so the next scene, Norma is driving and she sees Sheriff Shelby and stops. They kind of flirt a little, and he asks if he can buy her a cup of coffee as a gesture of goodwill, and she accepts. It cuts to them in the coffee shop, and she is telling him how hard it has been for Norman since his dad died, and she wanted to give him a new start. She says it's compromise when Sheriff Bulldog stands on her porch making accusations. He explains that the sheriff grew up with Keith Summers, and it's pretty personal. Someone walks up to the deputy and asks if he will be at the woodchuck that night. Norma asks what that is, and he explains it's a local festival and says she should go. He says he can't take her, but they can meet there. So yeah, she knows how to play Deputy Shelby from the second
Oh yeah.
she sees him in her car.
Oh yeah. She, it seems like she definitely had a plan to flirt with him.
Yes, and Shelby, we haven't really mentioned him much, but he's lingering in the background of both of these confrontations with her and the sheriff, and they kind of give each other looks like, is this guy for real?
Right.
So I think she knows that she can play this guy. And she
Right.
does. And she does this very skilled.
She does. I mean, as soon as she stops her car and he walks up to the window, she like puts her arms out. She's like, just put the handcuffs on me, you know? And yeah, she's all full of smiles and looks and yeah, she's got it down. And she's done this before. That's kind of the idea I get, is that this is not her first time like using
Her feminine
sex or
wiles.
yeah, as a way to get men to do what she wants them to do, or you know, which I don't know, it's kind of interesting to think about now that I think about it when it comes to her teenage son.
What I have to say about that. So we get a little more background that the sheriff and Keith Summers were like best pals
Right, that
growing
they grew
up.
up together, and I the deputy puts it like, you know, when you spend a lot of time doing nothing with someone, you get to know them, you know. He kind of emphasized, so you kind of get the idea that they were like young boyfriends, like maybe met when they were like 10 years old or something type
Sure,
thing.
yeah.
You know, not just in the last 10 years they've been friends. Like they were friends from little boys.
Yeah, and he plays this whole scene just kind of like on her side, and it's not in like a good cop way to me. It's more like a don't worry about this guy. Let's talk, you know, let's have some coffee. She's playing him like a fiddle, and he is taking it.
Yeah, I've got a little bit more to say about Deputy Shelby, but I think I'll need to save it for like the spoiler part. Because just the way he acts, knowing what we know about him now.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to talk about, but for the sake of this scene and for what just I'm trying to look at this through eyes that haven't seen everything. Yeah, so he seems to be just kind of like, hey, you know, he's just a big dumb jerk.
Right.
Don't worry about Sheriff Bulldog, you
He
know.
treats, yeah, like he treats everyone this way or something, you know, like this is nothing, you know, I don't know. He also
Also,
does, I remember he does point out, you know, because when Norma says that, you know, it doesn't help when he's making all these accusations, he does kind of echo what Sheriff Romero said. And he goes, well, I do think you were kind of inferring that,
right.
which I don't know, was she? I mean, Romero just seems so bent on,
Oh, from the sec, like we've
you
talked
know.
about, from the first sentence he ever says to her, he is on the prowl and he is suspicious. So I.
And even when he meets her for that first time in the motel room and he has to use the bathroom, Keith Summers isn't even missing at that point.
Exactly. That's what
And
I'm
he's,
saying,
you
is he
know.
just from the get-go, the sheriff has been on her
Yeah.
in a really antagonistic way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Unless it's he seemed to know, unless he did know more than
Well,
he acted like he knew about Keith at that point, I don't know.
or this just hit me.
Huh?
Do you could he have known who bought the property from the bank and maybe did some background check on her? And maybe there is something, some questionable things in her past?
Maybe.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that could be like really stretching it, but he just.
And also, to have a husband die in an accident in the home and her collecting a bunch of insurance, it sure seemed easy.
Right. And I would think that's probably a little bit suspect.
Yeah, and if she had a big past, you would think that her insurance would be
Right,
delving
'cause
into that a
you
little
know,
harder.
Keith Summers sure seemed to know a lot about her and Norman when he first, you know, he's like, "You're 17, you're, you know," he knew all
That's
about.
true.
How would he have known all that?
How would he know?
So
I don't know.
maybe Romero did do like, maybe he found out who bought it and, you know, somehow did some search and some police file,
Well,
whatever.
I did say that first episode, it seemed weird that he didn't know that she had moved in.
Right.
You know, it just seemed suspicious that the cops just came by because there were lights on and they didn't know anyone moved in, you know.
That's true. I mean, they probably
I had
did
an issue with
know,
that.
and they're just saying they didn't know, and that's why they're stopping by. I don't know. Maybe Romero knows something about something. I don't know. Just a thought.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, maybe we'll find out. Maybe we won't. So in the next scene, so Norman's in his room and Norma runs in and asks how her outfit looks. She says that she is meeting Deputy Shelby in town. She tells Norman she didn't want to have to tell him, but the police had come by the night before because someone saw them talking to Keith Summers and she had told them that she hadn't seen him. She tells Norman not to worry. She thinks everything is okay. Then she grabs another top and says maybe it will be better and takes off the top she is wearing. Norman looks away and she rolls her eyes and says, "Lord Norman, I'm your mother. It's not like it's weird or anything."
No, not
Not
weird at all.
at all.
Go on.
She puts on the other top and he says that she doesn't have to do this. She says that she isn't doing anything. Norman says he doesn't want her to go and she says it's a community thing. He says, "Fine, then he is going too." And she says no. She says it doesn't mean anything. It's not like she is actually interested in him. She is doing this because she doesn't want him to worry about anything and it will all be good. So, another creepy Norman scene. I mean.
Yeah, so she takes her top off, and what she has on, I don't know, I'm an old married woman and all, but that was really fancy.
Oh yeah,
That
it's like
undergarment.
a
It was
bustier
beautiful.
type. It's not a bra. It was like
No,
a.
it was something you put on at a date where you don't plan on keeping your shirt on all night.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was really fancy in the back. It had like
Oh, it was very pretty.
lattice work. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It looked really expensive and really nice, and I think Norman's a 17-year-old even knew. He's like, that's not something you wear when you're planning to keep your shirt
Right.
on. So I don't think it was as much staring at her. I think it was more like, I know what you've got planned, you know.
That's not the stretched out bra with ultimate that you would normally wear. Yeah, and just I just love how she's like, Lord Norman, I'm your mother. It's not like it's weird or anything. It's absolutely weird.
Absolutely weird.
I mean, I don't know. Just he's 17.
He's 17. It's
It's
if
not
he
like
was
he's
seven,
four.
like it wouldn't be weird for me to pop my shirt off and put another one on in front of my 8-year-old daughter. My 8-year-old daughter.
Right. 8-year-old and daughter both being key words.
Right. 17-year-old
17,
son.
son. You know,
It
I
is weird.
don't know.
Hate to
It's.
break it to you.
And for her to like not think it's weird is weird. You know, because it should be weird.
And honestly, he was acting more like a jealous boyfriend. Like I was saying, he's like, he knows that she had things planned. She was.
Exactly, because her saying, I mean, he's like, you don't need to do this, and I'm gonna go too. So it just leaves me to believe she's done this before.
Absolutely, yeah.
And with, you know, in another scene, you know, we see that Dylan has her name as the whore on his phone. So, you know, there's probably something to that.
Absolutely.
You know, and yes, and Norman does kind of act like a jealous. I mean, I would think any normal 17-year-old kid would kind of be upset if his mom
Yeah, well,
was
and
the
this
best.
comes up in a lot of shows and stuff, and they act differently. They act kind of like, oh, I'm so embarrassed, my mom's the slut of the neighborhood kind of deal. Not like jealous boyfriendy.
So I don't know.
Unless there's a dad still in the picture, and there wasn't.
No, there's no dad. I mean, Norma's dad's dead. Dylan's dad, I don't think, is
I don't think he
dead.
cares or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's. It's basically. They did not act like a normal mother and son in this scene.
Oh no.
From anything else, I think that's just what we take from that.
Yep.
And also, if we couldn't tell during the last scene, we can tell now that she's. A little, we get a bigger, I don't know, a bigger knowledge of what she's doing, although we already knew.
Right. Yep. So, all right, so we wrap that up as just another weird.
Yeah.
Another weird mother son.
Give us the creeps.
Yep.
The show does that. Okay, so the next scene is in a big warehouse with a guy working on a boat. Dylan and the guy he met at the strip club walk up to him, and the guy introduces Dylan and says he is the guy he told him about. The guy working on the boat asks Dylan if he knows how to use a gun, and Dylan says yeah.
Yeah, so just a short scene. Sorry I used guys so much, but I didn't get any words.
We do find out that guy's name later, but yeah, I don't remember. So, yeah.
Right. So.
And this is just another Dylan's little C plot is progressing.
and they're kind of boring scenes. Just basically, we need to move along Dylan and what he's going to be getting into later.
Kind of boring, but the only thing I really have to say is for what these guys are doing and what they're hiring Dylan to do, they sure seem pretty trusting, like, from...
Yeah, we don't know yet what they're doing.
Right, but, yeah, I guess we can save that for spoilers, but it just, I don't know.
Yeah, do you think that Dylan... I'm guessing that Dylan and this guy have had some off-screen big-time conversations.
Yeah, I guess we can assume that.
I'm going to give the show that benefit.
We're going to have to assume that because it's just
how I read it.
It seems to me that someone would have to, it would take a few years for someone to get to that point in that, I don't know.
Right, although the town's strange.
That's
true.
Getting
vibes of it this episode, even towards the end. But, yeah, I'm thinking the strip club night, they leave it kind of a cutoff of the scene, and I think they probably talk a lot. And for whatever reason, this guy decides he really trusts Dylan.
Right. Yeah. So, all right.
And I'm guessing that whoever this guy brings into the boss decides that if this guy is... I wish we knew his name. Crying guy in the strip club. We can call him Weepy.
Weepy.
So what, when Weepy brings some guy in, he's been screened enough, maybe.
Right, he's been vetted. All right.
Let him in.
So, okay, so some off-screen stuff has happened, definitely. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so next scene. Norman is in the kitchen getting something out of the oven. Dylan walks in and asks, "What's for dinner, honey?" Norman tells him to screw off. He didn't make a mom dip. Dylan's phone rings, and Norman looks at it, and it says the whore is calling. Dylan answers it, "Hi, Norma." Norman does not look happy. Dylan talks to her about getting estimates for plumbing. Norman turns around, kind of mincing, looking, and attacks Dylan. Dylan throws Norman to the ground and says he lets her treat him like a puppet. Norman says no, she isn't perfect, but she cares about him. Dylan slams him against the fridge and says, "She has ruined Norman." Norman says if he hates her so much, why is he staying there? Dylan says because he has nowhere else to go. And then adds, "Don't you come at me again or I'll hurt you bad. You don't understand." Norman just stays there against the fridge and grabs a meat cleaver and tries to attack Dylan and misses. Dylan punches him several times and Norman falls to the floor. Dylan says he told him not to do that and walks out. Norman lies there on the floor and says she's not a whore. This is an interesting scene, one of maybe the most interesting of the episode.
I think so, because, I mean, for one thing, it shows that Dylan has Norma as the whore on the phone, mm-hmm. and that upsets Norman very much. And just what got me is when Dylan says not to do that because he will hurt you bad, you don't understand.
Yep, that got me too. Interesting words.
So, do you think Dylan has this thing that Norman has?
Oh, I don't know. I never thought of that.
But knows how to control it?
Ooh, weird. I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Might be more of a spoiler section.
Yeah, we could definitely touch more on that in the spoiler section, but I don't know. I don't know. I think it's interesting that this is the first time. Later, he does this a little more, too. Maybe in later episodes, but kind of trying to get to Norman away from Norma for a minute and be, and try and like an older brother.
Right.
I mean, he's mad at him for attacking him, but he's actually really trying to kind of get to him as an older brother and kind of a I guess not a nice way, but as a favor, more like maybe you could say.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of an upsetting scene. It's just upsetting to me to watch two brothers fighting anyway, or just two people fighting like that. I don't like it. I'm not.
No, I don't either. I like everybody to get along.
I know. I'm better when people are like yelling at each other and like maybe putting each other down. But when it comes to like actual fists coming out and attacking each other with, and I guess that wasn't a meat cleaver. It was like more of a tenderizer. One of those.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have brothers that fought a little bit, but not much. And I think for seven kids, we didn't, you know, we fought, we bickered.
Nothing like this.
There was, I don't think. Okay, the meat cleaver thing was like, Norman, don't lose your temper, Norman. This was don't lose your temper, Norman guy right. coming out right. that Norma fears and right. should all fear.
Exactly.
You see his eyes change, almost like he's more zombie-ish. And, it's obviously something's come over him. And I think it starts with the whore thing. But it gets worse when he gets attacked by Dylan. Or I don't know. Maybe it like comes on slowly. What do you think?
Well, I think it starts when Dylan comes in and says, "What's for dinner, honey?"
Yeah, he took offense to that.
He took offense to that. And then right after that, the phone rings and he sees that it says the whore. And then Dylan says, "Hi, Norma." You know, because I'm not sure if Norman knew that that was Norma until
he didn't. He did not.
Said, "Hi, Norma." You know,
you could tell the second he said, "Hi, Norma," that
made him look unhappy. Yep. Yeah. And then, because it's right after Dylan gets off the phone with her that Norman turns around and he attacks Dylan. And, you know, Dylan kind of throws him down and then.
Yeah, you know, I'm always looking for this is like the most fascinating thing to me with Norman is what makes him fly off the handle? If it's like something about his mom, you know, that's like so fascinating to me. But it seems like when you look at it and you really pull the scene apart, that it's really just him losing his temper.
Yep.
I don't know if it even had to do anything with his mom. I mean, I look for it. So I'm trying to look at it with not my eyes that are just looking for it. Because I kind of want it to be defending his mom or anyone having it have to do with his mom. But it seems like it just, you know, his adrenaline keeps going up. He keeps getting more angry because Dylan is letting it get worse, and then he starts attacking him, and then all of a sudden it causes Norman to grab the meat cleaver and honestly try and kill him.
Right, but
violently.
Oh yeah, it's a pretty. I mean, what I'm guessing is that Dylan must have been able to see Norman in the reflection of the glass, and just move his head just in time, and that's why Norman hits like the glass that's the cupboard. Instead of Dylan's head. Norman comes after him with that meat tenderizer cleaver thing. But, I mean, I would say this whole thing is definitely about Norma. And Norman defending her. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Dylan's phone calls her the horror. And Dylan, you know, says that, you know, Norma is ruining him. And he treats... You know, she lets him treat him like a puppet. And Norman tries to defend her. You know, she's not perfect, but she cares about me. And, you know, it's all about Norma.
Yeah, and it gets, especially it seems since to get worse. Like, he sits there against the fridge, and it kind of, like, comes over him.
He stays against the fridge for a long time.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Like,
the change is happening. Going on.
Well, and then just the very ending of that scene is Norman laying on they're on the floor, and after Dylan walks out, and Norman is like, she's not a whore. So it brings it back around to Norman.
Right. That's right. Because you know, Dylan just punches him. You know, he wastes him.
Yep.
And Norman is just like there, just breathing heavy.
Just laying on the floor, and the last thing he says is, she's not a whore. Uh-huh. So it's all about her.
And it, yeah, right. It takes it right back to the beginning that kind of set him off.
Yeah. So, interesting. So, the next scene, we're at the local festival, and Deputy Shelby and some other guy win a log sawing contest. I don't know what else to call it. I'm sure there's a name. then it cuts to him and Norma walking together, and he is telling her there are a million reasons Keith Summers could be missing because of the bad crap he got into. Norma says she had such high hopes when she and Norman moved there, but weird things keep happening. Deputy Shelby points out it's a weird town. Has she noticed what people do for a living? Artisanal cheeses and pig farms, yet everyone drives nice cars and has nice houses. He says the town was built on the logging industry, but that all collapsed with the tree huggers. He says there are different ways to produce an economy, and it's not always what it seems. She says they can't allow illegal things to happen. And he says that people deal with things in a different way, but it gets dealt with. She says, what about the guy that got burned? And he says, it'll be dealt with. An eye for an eye.
Yeah, so we're getting a little insight on the town.
Yeah, this just seems to be kind of like exposition.
Yep. Insight on the town. We get maybe there's illegal things happening that the cops, you know, there's crooked cops we can get out of this. Illegal, the eye for an eye thing is always kind of ominous to me. That just kind of seems archaic and Lord of the Flies-ish.
Piggy!
You know, it's kind of, I don't know, like society tries to rise above that. And so when you start hearing it, I don't know how much we really have, but.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, this scene is just kind of.
And if you hear somebody got burned, and then he says it'll be dealt with, an eye for an eye, you know, we're not talking lethal injection or something. We're talking being burned.
Right. And this is a deputy saying this, too.
Right.
Not like, oh, don't worry about it, Norma. We'll get the good bad guys, and right, justice will prevail, you know.
Dun, dun, nah. You know?
It's an eye for an eye. What?
Exactly.
So, yeah, this scene, yeah, really not a, it's not a plot-moving scene or anything. It's just exposition. We learn a little bit about the town.
Exactly.
And the attitude of the cops and the people who live there. So,
although artisanal cheeses and organic pink farms, those sound like rich people stuff.
It's kind of what I thought too, but I don't know.
Those were weird examples.
Yeah. Yeah. If he would have said, like, they make happy sack, you know, hacky sacks and grilled cheese sandwiches.
We do artisanal cheeses, fine wines, and I mean, what are you talking about? And everyone drives nice cars and houses? What?
True. So, yep. So, all right.
Okay. So, moving on, I guess. Norman is in bed watching an old movie. That sounds familiar.
Yep.
That's weird. I never put that together. Anyway, Norma comes in and sees he has a black eye. He says it's no big deal that he and Dylan don't get along. Norman says Dylan needs to leave. She won't stand for him hurting Norman. Norma leaves the room, and Norman gets a text message from Emma telling him to meet her at her shop. It cuts to Norman arriving at the shop. It's a taxidermy shop. Emma asks what happened, and to his face, and he says he fell down some stairs. She says, "That's okay, you don't need to tell me." He says, "Thanks." He asks about all the animals, and she explains her dad is a taxidermist. Dun, dun, dun. She tells him to sit down. She has scanned that diary into her computer and tells him the story. It is four girls from China who were promised U.S. citizenship. I think they work as maids, but are forced to have sex. One of them dies of an overdose, and the other girls are forced to carry the body into the hills and dig a grave and bury her by a shed in the trees. Eventually, the girls are sold into sex slavery. She shows them a sketch and says it's a mountain by White Pine Bay. Her dad had shown her that it really exists. She says they can find the spot and see if the grave really does exist. He says it's all really peculiar. She says, no, you know what's peculiar? A 17-year-old boy using the word peculiar. Then she kisses him and says, so, you in?
Yeah, so, is this that same night? Did Norman sneak out again?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. This is the same night.
Okay, so after...
Because she says, you know, pretty much come over right now. And it's obviously the same night. He's I don't know, when he's in his, like, fugue state, does he turn on an old movie and lie in his bed? Or was he on the couch?
He was in his bed.
He's like, violence, fugue state, old movie.
Yep, these old movies must relax them or something. And I tried to find out what movie it was, and I just couldn't find it. But...
I'll have to check it. Maybe I do. I didn't really know this. Norma... Okay, so she comes in, and he knows that they at least... fought. Mm-hmm. I just wonder how much he remembers. Does he remember the whole thing, or? I think I know, but I don't know if we know yet.
We don't know yet, but we'll know later. We can maybe talk about it in spoilers.
Okay.
But, I mean, I would say he probably remembers the first couple swings, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
And I love that we see a taxidermy shot, that's what Emma's dad does.
Mm-hmm.
Because that has to do with the
years
Norman,
and years later.
Yes, the Norman that we know. But, so yeah, she has, you know, it looks like she scanned that diary into her computer and had people like interpret it or something. And so she just discovers it's the story of, you know, like a sex slave thing that's going on in her town. And she thinks it's real because she recognizes the mountain in one of the sketches. And she thinks they can go find it if they go hiking. And then she kisses him. And it's so cute and awkward. And
yeah.
I don't know. He looks kind of happy, I thought. About the kiss?
Yes, he definitely did.
Yeah, maybe he's realizing that's what a real kiss is like instead of mom.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's definitely surprised about it, and I don't know, she's funny.
Yeah.
They're cute.
They are. I really like Emma.
Yeah, me too.
So. The next scene, we see Dylan is putting a record on the record player and having a drink. And the record is, the song is This Guy's in Love with You by Herb Alpert, I found out.
See, I wondered. It was familiar enough, but not enough that I could pinpoint the artist or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize the song, but I had to look it up. I wouldn't be able to pull Herb Alpert.
I'm glad you looked it up. You know? Yeah, he's not in my mental Rolodex.
No, it's just another 70s one hit, probably. I don't know, maybe Herb Alpert had more. I might get yelled at for saying that. but so Dylan is looking at some framed photos of Norma and Norman, and then Norma comes down and tells him she saw what he did to Norman, and he can't stay there because he is toxic and he has to leave in the morning. Dylan then asks her how Sam died, and Sam is Norma's dad, and he says he had to do a lot of research to find out where they had moved to, and he talked to one of the insurance people who told him how tragic it was that Sam died, and he thought about telling them what life with Sam was really like. Norma doesn't really seem to know what to say and just says, just keep the music down.
Yeah, she obviously got uncomfortable kind with of his line of talking.
Rattled or something. So, I mean, she goes from, like, telling him that he's toxic and he's to leave in the morning to just keep the music down.
And there is actually a deleted scene on this episode that sheds quite a bit of light. It's kind of like the after effects of this scene, which is too bad they cut it out.
Oh, okay. Because I just, without seeing that deleted scene, I mean, I just think, is she afraid of what Dylan might know?
Obviously, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because she seems to have a change of mind.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we might as well just talk about the scene. We're almost to the end anyway, and it'll just help this scene a little bit. And it's a deleted scene, so it's not a spoiler.
Oh, okay.
So the deleted scene is breakfast the next morning after the fight with Dylan. It's so awkward. Dylan and Norma are sitting at the two heads of the table, and Norman comes and sits down, and he's got the black eye. And he sits down in between them. Norman does not say one word during the entire scene. Mm. It's all just like looks kind of at Dylan, looks at the mom. And Norma says, I know we talked about this a lot, and I know we had our struggles, but if Dylan wants to stay here, he can. We're family.
Oh, interesting.
And then she goes, would you please pass the marmalade? And Dylan shuts the marmalade jar, hands it to Norman, like he's big stuff. And Norman hands it to Norma, and she opens it. Norma just kind of sits there, not knowing what to do, and then the scene blacks out. So it's, judging from that, obviously she was, like, scared stiff about Dylan's line of questioning.
Yeah.
We don't really know why, but it's all of a sudden, hey, you know, I know that we were going to throw him out, and I know he just punched your face in a million times, but if he wants to stay, he's family.
Huh, interesting.
Can you pass a little marmalade, okay, please? Aren't we a perfect little family? Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so, yeah, so he definitely rattled her, like I thought.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay.
And we'll just dispel the other scene, deleted scene, just while we're on the subject, because it's really boring. It's just a boring scene of Norman walking to or from Emma's. You don't really know. It's like a 3-second scene.
Oh, well, included that.
They included that as the deleted scene.
Everything must be included. No, no second of footage lost. Oh, that's funny. Okay, so, yeah. Interesting. All right.
So after that and talking about going back to the scene, obviously Dylan is acting like he's got some knowledge and Norma is afraid of that knowledge. And so Dylan is, won that. He won that round.
Yeah. Yeah. Point for Dylan.
Yes.
Definitely. Definitely. Which is probably hard to do against Norma.
Yeah.
So, all right. So then the next scene is Norman and Emma are hiking to where they think the body is buried. Emma's having a hard time breathing and they take a short break. When they start hiking again, they come across a big pot field. They get noticed by some guys with guns and start running, and the guys with the guns start chasing them. They keep running and then come across the shed from the pictures. And Emma stops for a second and points it out, but they have to keep running. they reach Emma's car just in time and escape. So that was an intense scene.
It was totally tense just because of Emma's breathing. Just, I'm like, oh, she can't run. She can't run.
I know. She had to take a break just seconds before they had to start running.
Right. And luckily they were running downhill, but yeah, that was tense.
Well, sometimes running downhill is even harder than going uphill.
It's a little harder on the knees, but not on the breathing.
True. True. But, I mean, how terrifying to just be going on a hike and coming across a big pot field and there's guys, I mean, they looked like AK-47s to me.
Yeah. Although they weren't just going on a hike. They were looking for bodies.
Well, true, but they weren't expecting to, you know, to come across what they came across.
And there's a bit of a spoiler, which I don't think is a spoiler we need to worry about, but Emma, in a later episode, says she didn't even think any of that was true. She was just pretty much trying to get Norman to do something.
She just wanted to spend time with Norman, yeah.
She was trying to come up with something that would get them together.
Right, right. So scary. I mean,
yeah.
Wow, that would just be terrifying. I think they get away.
They get away, and they see the shed, and that's kind of crazy for them, and kind of important to the story, I guess.
Right, right. And then
it's important for us to feel like maybe. I mean, we did see a scene in the first episode of a girl chained up. And a needle and an eye opening and, you know, kind of stuff we did see in the diary. So we're kind of privy that, so it's not quite as important to us that shed actually does exist and that this diary is possibly very true.
Oh, true. That's true.
But it's another way for us to know that
they're onto something.
Yeah, they're onto something.
Yep, something's up. There's more to that diary than, it's not just manga, it's...
Right.
It's true, but, so, yeah, and then, just the last scene is quick, it's Norma is driving in town, and you see, like, the townspeople are, like, running towards something, and you see the cops diverging the traffic, and Norma sees there's a body kind of in the middle of town, hanging upside down on fire. So.
Yeah, it's very like French Revolution guillotine-esque.
I know. Well, and there's like balloons around it.
Yeah, like, it really is.
It's definitely something that was set up, I guess, from the festival. You
which
know,
is so disturbing. It's such a disturbing scene. And it's. You'd like to think that in this day and age, people are above this, but. I think in this day and age, we'd still have the French Revolution guillotine gawkers and, hey, let's get scones and put up balloons and watch the beheading.
That's true. I
don't think people have changed that much.
Yeah, I guess there is just that curiosity factor, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you found out there was a body hanging upside down burning... Do you run towards it or away from it?
Right.
You know.
And it's disturbing to see the cops just treating it like it's an accident or, you know, hey, yeah, like, diverse traffic.
They're just a fender bender up above. Go, you know, just go over here.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, and it's definitely, it's like Shelby said, it's the eye for an eye. I mean.
Little creep sauce.
Yep. Yeah, and that ends the episode.
All right, that's it, folks. Ratings.
Yeah, so what are you going to give it?
I'm going to give this one 3.5 burning bodies.
Yeah, you know, my first thought before even recording was about a 3.5 as well, but... Just so we're not exactly the same, which I guess isn't a bad thing. Plus, we're sisters, so we do kind of think the same. I'll give it like 3.75 Burning Bodies.
Okay, 3.75. Good.
Yeah. So, it's definitely not as good as the first episode.
No, it's... There's interesting stuff, and there's, you know, there's good interesting stuff, but...
Right.
Maybe a little slow. It's not action-packed. There's no rapes and body hiding.
No, but we get two burned people.
We do. So we get burned
there's
people.
There's stuff.
We get a meat cleaver almost attack.
Yeah, I mean...
But I don't know. Everything doesn't have to be action all the time. But this was a...
No, absolutely not. There has to be... If slow means because there's character development or plot development, then doesn't mean it's bad.
Right. But it's not a standout episode that's like, oh yeah.
Right. I agree.
That one's awesome.
I agree.
Or you wait for and all excited about.
But right.
Still a solid episode.
It's a solid episode, and I do think that they do introduce some things, especially like the pot field and the burning body, and just bringing Dylan in, because I think Dylan is a great... I like him. I think he's... I like how they've brought in this third person into the Bates family, because I think he brings... an interesting perspective, a little bit of comic relief. And I think we would get a little tired of the Norman and Norma if it was just those two.
Yeah, and you kind of need someone in there that's kind of like, what are you guys doing? You know, don't you guys ever get sick of each other? It's good to have a character like that.
Right, because he seems to be the one that kind of, like, speaks for the audience.
Exactly.
So, you need someone like that in this kind of heavy relationship. You need someone to bring what Dylan brings. And so, I think introducing him, like, again, just thinking of someone who's never seen it before, I think I would be interested to go on to the third episode.
Right, and I was, and I did.
And I did as well. But neither of us watched it like on a weekly.
Yeah, there is a difference there.
There's a difference there. You know, we didn't have to wait a full week for the next episode. We were just able to like, okay, you know.
Yeah, I watched. In fact, I rented it from the library and I only get it for a week and I rented it on a Wednesday. I didn't get to it till Sunday. So I had to like allot the episode. So I watched the first three on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of starting early in the evening until a little later. And so, you know, I was boom, boom, boom.
Right.
And there's a difference there.
There is. There's a difference between, because we both watched it when the whole season had already been out and you could watch it.
Right.
Not as it came out week by week. But I still think it would keep someone's interest. So,
sure. Yeah, especially if you've invested just the whole idea of the show is enough to give it a few watches, I think. Especially the writing is quality and the acting is pretty quality.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, it's a great concept, but if you watch the first episode and it's like, ugh, you know, which happens. But I personally don't find this as one of those. I think they do a pretty good job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's still a very good episode. So, all right. So we got a 3.5 and a 3.75.
Yep.
Still not bad ratings at all.
Not at all. We move on to What the Bip?
Yeah. Do you have a What the Bip moment?
I do. My What the Bip moment is actually Emma kissing Norman. I liked it, yet it's a full-on mouth kiss. And, you know, and it lingers. It's not just a peck.
Right.
Even on the mouth. It's a kiss kiss. And then she's acting weird that whole night. She's like surprised that he even came. And then she like just Emma's way about her. She just kind of tucks, you know, just kind of she's quirky, but not in an obnoxious way.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of in her own little way that's very endearing. But then she just full on kisses him. Like I said, it lingers and it's a full mouth to mouth kiss. And then she's just like, so are you in? And it was what the bibbish.
It kind of was. Yes, that's a good what the bit moment. I was kind of torn between two, but then after talking to you about it, I've decided that my what the bip is the scene with Dylan and Norma when he's playing that Herb Alpert song, and just how I kind of realized that Dylan either knows more than he's leading on, or it just struck me how he seemed to change her mind.
Yeah. Yeah, what the bip there.
And then you letting me know about that deleted scene, I was like, all right, so he definitely did change her mind. So what the bip is up with that? What does he know and he's not saying, or what are we going to find out, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
she's such a strong person, and he just seems to, you know, I've said it before, he rattles her, and I find that interesting. I found that kind of a what the bip.
I agree. What the bip? What the bip freaked her out so much.
Yep, exactly. All right.
She's acting blackmailed.
Yeah, so
from
exactly.
What I said in the scene, she's acting like a blackmailed person.
Exactly. Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Okay. So I guess let's do next time on Yes,
oh,
Mother.
That's right.
The next episode, episode 3, is called What's Wrong with Norman? Dylan starts his new job and learns that there is more to it than he thought. Meanwhile, Norman and Emma make a shocking discovery. Okay, and also, guys, we would love it if you are out there and we're not talking into a internet chasm of nothingness, drop by and say hey. Just say hey, you know, just on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Yes Mothercast, and we have a Facebook page, which is just Yes Mother Podcast. You can find it that way. We're on Quadruple Z. You could leave a comment there. You could email us at Gmail, yesmotherpodcast@gmail.com. There's so many ways you could do it. And, you know, if you don't, we understand that too. And read your feedback.
We'll read the feedback, send us your what the bit moments, or just any general feedback. We'll read it.
Yep. So, anyway, just putting that out there. Join us after the music, and we will have a little spoiler or two.
Yeah.
Discussion if you want to stick around for that. We will, and if not, we will see you next week, we think.
As far as
we know, it'll be next week.
Yep.
And have a great time till we see you again. Bye.
Yep. Bye, everybody.
Are they gone?
I just heard everyone click off.
Spoilers. I don't have much. I guess we talked a few things, but did you take notes about stuff we said we'd talk about?
One I have a note about is just Deputy Shelby. Is he just like being nice to her and helping her because he's afraid, like going through the books or something, that she's going to find out about him? Do you know what I mean? It seems kind of odd to me that a cop would be so willing to help her out the way he does.
Especially his level of involvement in what was going on at her hotel.
Right.
He's a high level of involvement.
Very high level of involvement. I mean, the girl is locked up in his basement.
Right.
And it just seems odd to me how willing he is to help out Norman and Norma. And I don't think, it just can't be because he's in love with her.
No, and he, you know, he does end up getting very involved in helping them out with the whole belt thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
the carpet fibers.
The carpet fibers, yeah, he really does. But he still kind of does seem like a dude interested in a pretty girl, too. There's a little of that, but maybe it's just total wool over the eyes. Or maybe it's just a bonus that she happens to actually really be pretty.
I guess so. I find it hard to believe that someone who is in that kind of business could actually have real feelings for someone.
True. You know? At this point, he doesn't know that she... So, what's motivation? He doesn't know that she actually killed Keith Summers.
No, at this point, he does not.
Basically, his stuff is that things were going on at her hotel and he's maybe scared she's going to find out.
Right, right.
And mostly find out that he's involved in it.
Right.
And he might be a little worried because Keith Summers is missing. He might be worried that she did it. And maybe she does know more than... Maybe she knows already? He doesn't know what happened.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. It's not real clear to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I just find it... It's just weird to me at this point right now, just how nice he's being. But you're right. They don't know that Keith Summers is really missing at this point.
And there's something to say for a show trying to just make something go a certain way. Maybe this is a nice way of accusing of lazy writing or whatever, but
right.
We don't know what we know. Basically, the audience isn't supposed to know what we know at this point, and maybe they just want you to think that he is a dude interested in a lady.
Just kind of smitten with her, because, I mean, it is a small town, so there's probably not a lot of new people that come in, and she is very pretty. And
right.
Right.
And she's flirty.
She's pretty flirty, so true. All right.
So it could just be that good audience diversion thing.
Right.
Sort of.
Right.
Or just trying to make things make sense to have them fall into where they want it to in a few episodes from now.
Right, right. It might be more of a discussion to have, like, after the belt thing and things like that. But
yeah,
the other thing...
more things will occur to us as we watched again.
Exactly. Another thing that we kind of talked about was the scene between Dylan and Norman in the kitchen, the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And how Dylan says... You know, he says, like, don't come at me again or I'll hurt you real bad. You don't understand. So, I don't know. I kind of mentioned, do you think, what does Dylan mean about, I'll hurt you real bad, you don't understand?
Yeah, I don't know. But we don't know at this point in season one.
We don't.
Through season one, nothing has shown up.
We don't, so maybe this could be.
And he
more.
hasn't shown in any of the later episodes. He doesn't show anything like that again, does he? I mean, this is, you know, for people listening to this, this is my first time at least seeing any show again. This is my first rewatch after knowing how season one ends, rewatching again.
Right, and I've watched the series twice, and now I'm watching it episode by episode a third time doing the podcast.
Okay.
But
so this is my first time seeing these episodes after seeing the end of the first season.
Right. And no, Dylan doesn't have any episodes, but I just find it interesting that he says that, because that just seems like a weird thing for, you know, maybe it's more of a prediction than a spoiler that, you know, maybe Dylan has the same affliction and has a way of controlling it more.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe they just wanted to give us one little clue, one little Easter eggy thing in the first season and have it come out more later on in the series.
Right.
So maybe, right. You know, maybe they planned it out all that far and
or maybe
just gave us one. Or maybe we're way too analyzing it.
Yeah, reading way too much into it. But it just seems like a weird thing to say. Like, don't, I'll hurt you real bad. You don't understand. He doesn't understand what? That, I don't know.
Maybe he's just the older brother that's seen more things and done more things, and Norman is, to him, is just the mama's boy.
True.
But I don't know.
I don't know.
So, okay. I only wrote down one spoiler in my notes, and we haven't even touched on this. So, that one scene that you talked about, your What the Bip scene.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan says, "How did Sam die?" And he asks her that, and in through the eyes of someone that's never seen it, I absolutely 100% hook, line, and sinker thought he was talking, being suspicious of her. Because these first few episodes, I am super suspicious of her. And I don't know if, I think they probably did that on purpose. Like, during the death of the father, of Sam dying, mm-hmm. I 100% thought she did it. I thought she killed her husband. And because they set it up a little bit that way, to have Norman walk in on it, and she seems so in the know about the whole thing, and he doesn't.
Right.
So I went, okay, she knocked that shelf over on him. I had no idea she had moved his body. I just thought she had tipped the shelf over on him and killed him, and then, you know, Norman seeing it for the first time. And so I am totally on the train Norma killed Sam. And so through my eyes the first time, Dylan says, "How did Sam die?" And she gets all weird. Through my eyes now, seeing the whole series,
mm-hmm.
How did Sam die? He is, I guarantee it, he's already suspecting Norman. And he is asking her that because he suspects Norman, not her. And that's, and so I think that's why she's scared. And
right.
That's why she, and I, you know, that's why she is easily manipulated to let him stay, because she does not, she probably knows, I don't know how much she knows about what happened between the two brothers that night, but she, do you think she at least suspects that Norman went nuts?
Yeah, I would think she does.
Okay. So, yeah. I think she is actually keeping Dylan on because she is scared for Norman, for him to find out about Norman. Although, in a few episodes from now, she tells him everything. And then they're very close, she and Dylan. And things change a little bit.
Right. Well,
not totally, but a little bit.
Norman's the one that tells Dylan everything about Keith Summers.
Yeah, but she tells him all about Sam's death and what actually happened.
Oh, does she? I see. I don't remember that, so I'm going to have to watch
that.
Yeah,
so it's called The Truth, and it's coming up in two episodes.
Oh, okay.
And so lots of truths come out. And one of them is her telling Dylan that Norman killed him. And then all of a sudden, you know, and that's why Norman can't move out with him, because he has problems, bigger problems than Dylan might know. But Dylan suspects it already. Anyway, it was interesting to hear him say, "How did Sam die?" And I just knew the second he said it this time that he's got suspicions on Norman. He knows something's up with him.
Right.
That whole meat cleaver attacking and kind of changing.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that when I viewed it the first time, I'm pretty sure I thought that he knows that Sam was murdered by one of them. I don't think I had an idea at that point of whether it was Norman who did it or her.
Yeah, it's funny. I came into the show, I mean, I came into the show knowing the movie Psycho and that Norman is the killer.
Right.
But they just set it up in a way where I thought maybe the mom is doing
right.
bad things and then Norman kind of takes on her mantle after she dies or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't really the case. After these first few episodes, I think it's From the Truth On, I look at the show differently and I look at their relationship and I look at Norman and Norma
mm-hmm.
just a little differently.
Right. Yeah, that'll be interesting because, yeah, I don't think I had that clear of a resolve like that. I think I just thought, okay, you know, he knows that Sam was murdered. And that's all I got to. Like, at that point, I didn't know if it was Norma or Norman who did it.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm weird that way sometimes. I just totally go every place the show wants me to. You know, global that way. I just totally forgot that Norman was like this huge killer. I was totally focused on the mom for a while.
Yeah, and see, I would think that I probably thought it was Norman because he, in my mind, is the killer. Just from the movie, you know. I don't know. I don't remember what I thought, but I do remember like being that scene was very interesting to me, and it still is. I mean, it ended up being my what the bip. It still sits mm-hmm. there with me, you know, as a really good scene. The only other like spoiler thing I wrote down was just the pot field, and how in the next episode or maybe the one after that we see that Dylan's one of the guys with the gun, you know, watching over the pot field.
That day he is?
No, in okay. the next couple episodes.
Right.
You know, and so that's, you know, when the guy in the warehouse sanding the boat, you know, do you know how to use a gun? And Dylan says, yeah, you know.
Right. Okay.
But, yeah, not too many spoilers in this one.
Nope.
Man, Bunny's been such a good boy, just sleeping at my feet the entire time.
Oh, that's good. Did you hear Lola drinking for like 10 minutes?
No, but Bunny did the same thing. Did you hear him?
This old man who has spent so much of his life sleeping and is able to keep awake for the rest of his years. He resides on a beach in the town.
This puzzle that I do, I bought 2 or 3 years ago that I do at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 1,000-piece puzzle. And I was about maybe a third of the way done. And last night, Bunny just like put his head on the table and put his tongue out and ate like 4 of the pieces.
Oh my goodness.
He just grabbed him like an anteater would grab some ants. Just like,
we're so informative.
I know.
I'm glad you all listened to this. We suck. Everybody sucks. Everyone I've ever known
is I've ever known is sucked. Hey, we're still getting our sea legs.
That's right. Be nice.